Oh, that's better? Really nice. Yes. Well done.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's almost Thanksgiving.
It is almost Thanksgiving.
I
am out on the road, even though in this incarnation it is the past, and I have not yet left on tour. I'm leaving in 2 days.
So we've talked about Thanksgiving a lot, I think.
Over the years.
Yeah, over the years. It's one of my favorite holidays. I'm going to go back to the Julia Child's turkey. People have already been asking on Twitter. The deconstructed, reconstructed from America's Test Kitchen.
It's an amazing turkey.
It is hard to beat.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and it's pretty hard to screw up if you follow directions, and that's what they're really great at.
I like following directions and I like not screwing up.
There was actually a blog post that complained that America's Test Kitchen and Cooks Illustrated made things too easy and that it somehow eliminated a process of discovery. And it was like, no,
that's
not. Process of discovery is all there. And more than that, because they're revealing their process of discovery, they have actually run a bunch of things off at the past that you don't have to waste your time on, so that you can say, oh, I'd like to replace this with that, because now I know it'll add the sweetness that I'd prefer.
And they tell you what to do to make the changes you want.
Yes.
When I was talking to Chris Kimball in Boston earlier this year,
which is a sentence I love.
It was one of my favorite sentences to say, it turns out. He said that they have a whole file of complaint letters that start with, I tried your recipe, but it didn't turn out the way I wanted it to after I substituted, and then ... Right? So it's like, we didn't follow your recipe, but we didn't like the way it worked out.
Right. And somehow it's your fault.
Yeah.
And somehow
it's a lovely glove.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Mr. Nagata.
So what do you do on the, like, last year we were in Canada, I think, on the road for
Thanksgiving. Last 2 years we've been in Canada during Thanksgiving. And this year, I believe on Thanksgiving proper, we might be in Ontario. I can't quite remember.
Oh, wow.
But
they had their Thanksgiving a while ago.
Yeah.
It's in Canada July
has
or
a different
something,
Thanksgiving.
Right?
And I have much to be thankful for about Canada, by the way. Can we talk about Justin Trudeau?
Yeah.
Like,
he dressed up for Halloween.
Did he really?
Yeah, I think he was Han Solo.
he is awesome. I actually have met him a couple of years ago. We had dinner together, and he is an amazing and lovely, incredibly smart man. And more than that, he's the new Prime Minister of Canada, and he is kicking ass over there. He appoints a completely gender-balanced cabinet, equally men and women. Mm-hmm. And when asked why, he says, it's 2015. That's why.
Yeah.
And then gives this look.
That was the emoticon shrug, in case you missed it.
And then he appoints a science minister. And I don't know if you've been paying attention to what Stephen Harper has been doing in Canada for the past 10 years, but he's been doing things like eliminating the census and stopping Canadian scientists from being able to publish their work without prior permission.
Well, it's the same things that we have, you know, like having somebody who, believes that the Earth was created 4,000 years ago.
6,000 years ago.
Sorry, 6,000.
Get your facts right.
6,000 years ago. I rounded down to be the House Science Chairman. That's always a good thing, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway. Okay. So. So
what do you do in Canada on the road for Thanksgiving?
We on the road, we work 6 day weeks.
Okay.
So we get 1 day off per week. So we will be doing this 32 city tour in like 35 days, 36 days.
What slackers?
It is. So on Thanksgiving, we'll usually be performing, but within a couple of days of Thanksgiving, we'll have a day off, and we always rent a little banquet room somewhere for the whole crew, which our road crew, I think, is 11 people plus our two truck drivers is another two. So it's like 13, 14 people, including Jamie and I, sitting down to a nice Thanksgiving dinner. And we've had it in several different places around the country over the years. But it's always really nice because this crew, road crews, man, they are gypsies. They, you know, one of my old road crew guys, Bob's like sees his apartment for about a month and a half a year.
Wow.
The rest of the time he is out.
Hopefully it's not in San Francisco.
No. They also live all over the place, from Costa Rica to Florida to, you know, Cincinnati. You don't have to live any specific place if you are a touring road dog.
This is one of those things, like, there are a lot of professions that are like this, right? Like, I have friends who are nurses that basically go where the wind blows, right?
Right, right.
So when somebody has a nurse shortage, when Houston has a nurse shortage, she'll go live in Houston for 6 months.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
My wife worked with travel directors, so they do events, and they are it's the same situation. They see their apartments maybe a month or two a year, and the rest of the year they're just on the road helping people run like giant conferences and small events and all sorts of stuff like that.
I don't know. I'm not sure I could do that. I don't,
Jack Reacher does the same thing.
So does George Clooney in Up in the Air.
Yeah.
Remember?
Sales guys.
Yeah.
Sales guys and crime solving.
Okay.
So we will have a nice dinner.
You and Jamie sit down by yourself by candlelight. You guys have cooked a turkey with a calorimetry bomb.
Stop it. This is slash fic now. Also, Mrs. Don't Try This, my wife, Julia, will be joining me on tour for a few days right around Thanksgiving.
Okay.
She gets a little extra time off from school, so she's going to come out. In fact, on this tour, I'm gone for 5.5 weeks. For I think 3 of those weeks, I have family with me. Thing 1 is coming out for 8 days. Thing 2 is coming out for I think 6 days, and my wife is coming out for 5 days. So I get a bunch of time with the family while out on the road.
Oh, that's great.
Has anyone ever brought you a pie?
No, we've been brought cookies before. Some we've eaten, some we haven't.
Yeah, it's the Halloween candy analysis. You look at the house, you look at the person, you're like, I don't know about this one.
Not.
Thanks.
Though. Maybe not. Yeah.
I'm a little weird about eating. When we get people send us food all the time at Tested, and for a long time, we just ate it without thinking about it. Then somebody was like, are you out of your fucking mind?
And then every now and then, thinking about it, all of a sudden you ask a question that cannot be unasked.
Yeah.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about, the folks at home can't see this, but my pool table, which is one of my central sort of staging tables for prop constructions. I'll lay stuff out to be able to see it all, has been clear for several weeks now.
We've done a lot of videos on the pool table.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like laying out props.
And it's a gold felt pool table that I've had for several years. I had it recovered a couple of years back. And normally it is covered with shit all the time. But for the last few weeks, it has been open. And that is a specific reason because I've been playing a lot of pool with my kids.
I grew up, my grandfather had a pool table in his basement. And like in full.
Yeah, full regulation.
Like the room
the appropriate amount of.
Because the problem everybody has is they buy a pool table and they're like, oh man, this is a lot bigger than I thought it was.
You need room for the pool table. And that room needs to be like 6 feet all the way around minimum. Plus you want to be able to have people sit in chairs without interrupting the space. So a genuine pool room can be like 20 by 25 feet.
It gets really big really quickly. Yeah.
Where am I going to put my VR masturbatorium?
Wow, Norm.
That's what
I'm the VR guy.
I was just gonna say inside thoughts, Norm. Inside thoughts.
This is what you hear your special lady friend call it.
The masturbatorium.
That is the best non sequitur. I know it's a sequitur, but it felt like a non sequitur.
I know what this episode's gonna be called.
So your you grew up going to grandpa's house and he had a full size pool table.
Yeah, so he grew up in New York as a Jewish kid in New York.
Oh, no way.
And he would go to pool halls when he was a kid.
Well, I know that he went to some of the legendary pool halls like Toots Shores then. If he grew up in New York in the 50s?
No.
60s?
He would have been, he was in World War II, so he would have grown up in the 30s
and 40s. Yeah. So maybe the most famous pool hall back then was Toots Shores, and Jackie Gleason was an absolute regular. Jackie Gleason, who famously played Minnesota Fats in the original Hustler film, from which the famous pool player Minnesota Fats took his name, because Minnesota Fats, the pool player's original name was New York Fats, but when he saw the movie, he was like, they based that movie on me, and he changed his name to Minnesota Fats.
That's amazing. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. But Gleason was a genuinely terrific pool player, a real world-class pool player.
Well, so the nice thing about pool is it's an application of practice, right? Yes. This is what my grandfather taught me, is that you play every day, you learn your angles, and then it's just a matter of like situational awareness and knowing what you should do and thinking about ball placement.
Thinking through the table, thinking through,
And it is like it is a sport. I mean, there's a conversation.
There's a physicality to it. Right. No, there's a definite physicality.
Muscle control matters. Mm-hmm. But it is something that anyone can learn. And so he taught me when I was probably 14 years old, 13 years old. And we, every time we went over to his house, we would play for a few hours. And I mean, we would actually play until he was kind of sick of playing. He would be like, well, I'm going to go do something else now. You guys can keep playing if you want.
Well, I grew up with a pool table. My parents bought, I'm sure I've said this before, they were part of the first exodus of Bohemians out of New York in the early 70s to parts outside. So they moved us an hour north to Tarrytown, where in this neighborhood I grew up in, Phillips Manor, which is now in Sleepy Hollow, New York. Phillips Manor was actually gridded out by Rockefeller, whose property was effectively next door. And they built five houses by the same architect for executives within the Rockefeller's organization.
Well, that must be nice.
And the five houses all have great similarities, but are very unique and different. And our house, the house my parents bought for $50,000 in 1972.
In fairness, with inflation, that's probably $300,000.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Actually, it's a lot of dough, but it was a 3-story, 15-room
holy cow.
Wow. Yeah, with a basement and an acre of land. I grew up in a very idyllic Thomas Kincaid kind of.
Yeah, this is very
wide streets, a block from the Hudson River. It was gorgeous, and the house was built with a billiard room in its basement.
That's of which convenient. You still have one of the balls.
I have the two original cue balls made of ivory. Because back then in 1910, when the house was built, that's what the high quality billiard balls were made out of.
Crazy.
We talked about 99 PI on either the next or future episode. There's a great episode about billiard balls.
Oh, really? They talk about the development
about
of the first industrial plastic?
Yes,
it's
exactly.
A great story.
Might have been a radio lab, but I think it was
I love telling that story. But so it had all original 1910 Brunswick ball colander equipment. I've still got the Kelly pool board, which is an incredibly rare piece. We sold the table a few years ago. I think my mom got a good amount of money for it at auction. But I grew up playing on that table, playing poorly. And then when I was, I think, about 16, my dad's randy friend, he really has no other way to describe this crazy Irishman named Bob Clatworthy. I think he was Irish. Might have been British. Anyway, Bob Clatworthy. Wonderful
artist. The
story's
better if he's Irish.
Randy, friend of my dad's. We're playing pool, and I'm playing terribly. And he turns to me and says, it's not really a game, is it? And I thought, fuck you. And so I don't know. For some reason, I started practicing.
Nice.
And you actually started practicing shots, not just hitting the balls around.
I started running through practice drills. And in fact, I think I was 17 when that happened. So that would have been 1984.
Mm-hmm.
I started playing and then played probably between 1 and 2 hours a day through 1990 when I moved out here to San Francisco. And by the end, I was in really, really good shape. I was going to New York. I was living in New York, so I was going between Society Billiards and Chelsea Billiards every single day. I had friends at both. I would sit and hang out with the hustlers and watch them play one pocket and one arm pool and crazy nine ball variants and
15
trick
ball.
Shots.
Yeah. 15 ball?
15 ball?
15 ball is when you have two shots and they have to add up to 15.
Oh my God, I've never played that.
Oh, it is a complete position game.
Oh, that seems to this one pocket is too. Each of you chooses one pocket and you have to sink all your balls in that pocket. So it's a banking nightmare.
This is my picture of my grandfather is changing a little bit based on the pool hall stories we're getting now. Because I never really thought about it, but like growing up playing billiards when you were in the 30s. A little bit of a rough thing, I would think.
Oh, no. Always. Yeah. Like, if you go hang out in pool halls, you're going to meet some interesting characters, and you're going to learn some really cool stuff. Pool played an incredibly important role in my life. It is one of those skills that helped me learn how to learn other skills. Mm-hmm. And the best, I have a huge library of billiard books going back to the 1800s. I think my favorite book I ever read on pool is Tim Galloway's The Inner Game of Tennis. It is a fantastic diatribe on getting yourself into the headspace of playing the sport that you're concentrating on and physicalizing it rather than mentalizing it. And I'm teaching thing one and thing two, how to be darn good pool players.
Oh, that's awesome.
I'm inculcating them with solid bridges, bridging off the rail, good practices, keep the cue low, follow through, practice
English.
Shots. And English, not English. I mean, the hardest part about English is not using it.
Yeah. Once you know how to do that, you're like, oh man, I'm going to do this all the time. And always a mistake.
No almost. Way. Yeah. So you really like, yeah, it's a wonderful education, and it's bringing all of this stuff back to me because my game's in the toilet. I haven't played regularly for decades.
But the thing about it is, so for a while when I was in Tennessee before I moved here, I lived down the street from a pool hall. And it was the neighborhood bar first. And then I was like, well, you know, I'd play pool. And I was there long enough to know who I should and shouldn't play.
Yeah.
And then almost got in trouble, right? Because I got in and I played a couple of games and I was real, real bad. And then it kind of, the switch flipped back on. And I was like, oh, okay, I can do this again. And the dude thought I was hustling him.
Yeah.
And a guy almost took a beating in the parking lot of the pool hall.
I got offered many fights when I was a good pool player because I could go to a bar. I remember in the early 90s going to the Albion and mm-hmm. holding the table all night long against the locals, and they would get pissy about it after a while.
People don't like that.
I have told my kids about it. I said, you know, if you go into the thing that I love, and I've run into this many times, and I actually ran into it at the Whale Rock Christmas party.
Last year. I remember this.
This is really cool. So I have in many cases walked into a bar where there was a pool table and there was a guy holding that table. And in most bars, there is a guy who holds the table. He's the house guy. And you walk in at the right night, he's drunk and he's beating everybody, but he's drunk. And I get on the table and I'm sober and I beat him.
Yeah.
And then he sobers up. Almost immediately. It's really always been a man. I have run into this once at the El Rio with a couple of lesbians, so I'm not going to say it's gender specific, but in the most cases, it's been men, and they sober up, they look at me with respect, and they either say out loud or with their body, you will not win another game tonight.
A challenger approaches.
And this happened at the Whale Rock Christmas party. There was an attendee there. There's a full-size pool table. Yes. There was a guy who was drunk as a skunk holding that table. I got up. I beat him one game, and I never got another shot on that guy because he sobered up so right quick.
Aww.
But I had his respect for the rest of the night.
That handshake was serious.
That's really...
I mean, to me, it's like the skill is an international membership, right?
I mean, and there's nothing you really want more than the respect of the kind of people who hang out at pool halls. Yes.
Exactly. So
what is the modern manifestation of that?
A pool hall.
For this generation. Oh, well.
It's Call of Duty server, somebody teabagging you when you get the headshot.
It's Street Fighter. It's Street Fighter at the arcade.
Yeah, Street Fighter at the arcade.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
You know, it is that handshake. You're right. That it's deeply satisfying that they can see a long tail of knowledge. Back then in my early 20s, as most people do, I moved back into my parents' house in 1988 for about a year. And my dad had a good friend, Robert Kipnis, a wonderful artist, wonderful visual artist, whose daughter, Ruby, I had gone to high school with. And what I didn't know about Bob Kipnis is, in addition to being a wonderful artist, he was a pool hustler in his early 20s in New York City. Mm. And this was in the late 50s and early 60s. He said he stopped pool hustling when he watched a guy get knifed in the gut and die at the table next to him at Julian's Billiards, which is the oldest pool hall still in New York, if it's still there.
Yeah.
Sitting on 14th Street above the Palladium. Again, most of these things are probably no longer there. But Bob agreed to teach me pool. And I'd already been playing very seriously for a few years. And Bob gave me some tremendous education in the simplicity of pool. Like, if you can crouch over the shot, knowing what you're going to do, how you're going to do it, where the cue ball will end up, and where each other ball you might contact will also end up. If you can do that every single time with confidence, you're going to play a great game.
It's just mechanics at that
point. It's just knowing those like four things. What am I shooting? Where is it going to go? Where is the object ball going to go?
I mean, honestly, if you want to improve your pool game faster than anything else, learn where the cue ball is going to go. That once I figured that out, my game improved dramatically.
And there are hundreds of books on pool. I will tell you, there are only a couple that are really, really, really important because I've read all of them. Mm-hmm. Robert Byrne, who is local. I frankly don't know if Robert Byrne is still alive. If he is, I want to look him up next year because he lived up in Marin, as far as I know, and grew up in pool halls in San Francisco in the 50s. Byrne's Standard Book of Pool and Billiards is the textbook It is the textbook, and no matter what skill level you are, you can crack that book open, read it from start to finish, and get better at pool because of it. He has a bunch of other books on trick shots and the history of pool. He wrote a great book about a pool hustler he knew named McGordy in San Francisco in the 50s, and some terrible and wonderful tales about pool hustling in the 50s. It is an incredibly rich sport. I got so obsessed with it before I left New York. One of my hobbies was to go to the New York Public Library, and I eventually, and I have it around here somewhere, printed out on microfiche every mention of billiards and pool in the New York Times back to its inception in like 1881.
That's something to do. What's your favorite game, Adam?
I love 8-ball. I love 8-ball and I love straight pool. I like the old style. 9-ball is a...
I never played straight pool.
Straight pool.
Is that where you go 1 to 15?
Well, no. Straight pool is literally you break the rack and sink as many balls as you can. Huh. The trick to straight pool is when you only have a couple balls left on the table, when you have one ball left on the table, you re-rack the other 14 without the head ball.
So you do it twice?
No. Straight pool is usually done to a score of 150.
Oh, any one ball is a point?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Or it's to 50, or it's to 100, or it's to 150. Yeah. And what that means is when you sink 14 balls, the last ball on the table stays where it is. You rack the other 14. And if you've done it correctly, you've placed your cue ball and that last object ball in a position so that in sinking the last object ball, you can re-break the rack.
Wow.
And... it's very complicated game
In
that regard. I think the world's record is something like 140 balls in a row. My personal record is 28.
That's really good.
And that is including cracking the rack halfway through.
Yeah.
I never got past two racks. 28 is my absolute limit at my peak.
So it's a fun game you just play by yourself.
Yeah. I love Screw Your Neighbor, which is a three-way game in which each person takes 1 through 5, 6 through 10, or 11 through 15, and the goal is to have one of your balls left on the table. There are some great safety plays in Screw Your Neighbor. Thing One and I and my friend Steven came here last week and played 10 games of Screw Your Neighbor, and my friend Steven won every single one. He was unstoppable.
Not really a game, is it?
No, it was, some of them were by luck, but I love having this table back up again. I love watching my kids use genuine pool terminology, and I keep telling them, you're going to go off out into the world and you're going to call me and be like, thanks for teaching me how
this
to play
is a
pool.
Skill that will pay yeah. back the time manyfold over the
totally.
Years.
Totally. And it'll be really fun. You know, it'll be really fun to play against other people in social situations.
Don't get the knife in the gut.
Yeah,
though.
Knife in the gut. I actually am really explained to them, no matter what, don't ever play for money. Don't ever take that friendly money offer. Someone is grooming you, no matter how doofus they seem. I've known hustlers practice shitty bridges that look like they're wobbling just to screw with you so that when they go, you want to make this interesting? Believe
no,
me,
you know you don't.
I have been offered these games hundreds of times. Don't ever accept them. The money game, things will get very cold very quickly.
What's the best pool movie?
Oh, Color of Money, man.
Color of Money is, yeah. I mean, it's hard to beat Color of Money.
There hasn't been another modern pool movie.
Well, The Color of Money, which are,
right.
The Color of Money is the sequel to Paul Newman's The Hustler. And The Hustler is beautiful. I love The Color of Money.
The Color of Money is Tom Cruise before he realized how famous he was going to be. And it is so good.
And Paul Newman and Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio. It's directed by Martin Scorsese. So Martin Scorsese, Martin Scorsese did two movies back then, After Hours and The Color of Money, to prove to the studios that he could make a movie on budget and deliver it and make money with it. This was a sort of a focused thing to get... from what I understand, to gain back studio confidence so he could make The Last Temptation of Christ, which still took several years after that. But After Hours with Griffin Dunn and Color of Money with Newman and Cruise are both terrific, just really solidly crafted, like pieces of carpentry, solidly crafted films. And The Color of Money is gorgeous.
It's It's one of those things that it's from a period and it's a type of movie that you would think would be paced poorly. It wouldn't have aged well. And when you watch it again today, it is every bit as riveting as it was when I saw it in 1990 the first time.
And you know who was a pool hustler growing up that you didn't know about?
Martin Scorsese.
Jack Klugman.
Really?
Yes. Oscar from The Odd Couple or Quincy from Quincy M.D. Jack Klugman grew up as a pool hustler.
He's the
and
right
actually
age
beat
vintage.
Minnesota Fats in an exhibition game on television back in the early 60s. Yeah, he was the real thing. He was a genuine
New York
terrifying pool player.
Do you find yourself watching pool?
Like, I have watched hundreds of hours of pool. Okay. I, in fact, have gone to pool tournaments, and I have some, back there on my sketchbook shelf, I have a sketchbook full of diagrams drawn from safeties that I learned while watching professional pool players play tournament play.
That's incredible.
Because there are a hustler said this to me early on in my playing. He said, he says, you're just as good a shooter as I am. And I was like, no way. You beat me all the time. And he's like, yeah, shooting is 10% of the game. Making the shots is 10% of the game. Strategizing how you're going to make those shots is the other 90. And it took me 2 more years of playing every day to actually understand what he meant, but he is totally right. The actual sinking of shots is nothing compared to the strategizing of shots.
Right. Right. A shot that leaves you in bad position for your next shot and your opponent in great position, you might as well have not made the shot.
I've seen people hold tables all night at bars and they barely made balls. They just kept on corralling their balls over near the pockets and then sinking them with lots of gimmies.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's as good a place as I need to wrap it up.
I
lots
think
of gimmies.
So. Yeah. Tell me your pool stories.
Love your family. Yeah. Have some pie. Go play some pool.
You know, I have one more pool story.
I am going to find some pool halls on the road, by the way.
Oh. So
tell me your one more pool. One more thing. Your Steve Jobs moment.
My one more thing. It's a funny story. I was sitting in a bar playing pool and I was with some friends. The guy next in line for the table was standing there watching and we were talking about whether it would hurt worse to get shot or stabbed. And we go on and on and on as people drinking and playing pool do. And finally, the guy who's sitting there waiting at the table says, stabbed is much worse. And I said, how do you know? And he's like, well, this one's from a stab and this one's from getting shot. And he pointed to the meat of his arm and I was okay, pool halls.
I have one more story. Which is many of my best nights at pool had been when I lost, but so spectacularly that I got the respect of the room.
Like a theatrical failing?
A theatrical failing. I had one in which in a game of 8-ball in a nightclub, I cleared the entire table, including spotting a pair of balls touching but perpendicular to the pocket and did a 2-bank kick shot to sink one in the corner and the crowd went bananas that I called what looked like a ball wedged into the middle of a stack right into the corner and then through literally no fault of my own scratched on the 8-ball. I mean, it was one of those no one could have seen it. But the rest of the night as I walked up to the table, people would clear for me. And there was one there was this bar in New York called MK. Back in the mid-80s, it was the place. And they had a top room full of glass-fronted cabinets filled with bones, which is an early inspiration for this room. And they had this big gold pool table in the middle of the room, and you put quarters up to play. And I used to go there alone. I had a friend who got me on the list of the nightclub a lot, and I would go and play alone. I was a weird kid. But one night, I'm playing, and I'm on the 8-ball. And the 8-ball is right in front of a corner. And I'm just about to sink it for the game when the guy I'm playing says, no, we're playing last pocket. And last pocket is a variant of 8-ball, which means that your 8-ball has to go into the pocket that you sunk your last ball in. It just so happens that the last ball I'd sunk was in the opposite corner pocket. And the 8-ball, I'll remind you, is nearly wedged into the corner pocket. And he goes, last pocket. And I'm like, fuck you, last pocket. He's like, no, last pocket. And the rest of the crowd's like, yeah, last pocket, last pocket. And I'm like, you are all, I can tell you don't want me here. And I did a kick shot banking off the horn of the corner with the cue ball.
Okay.
Hit the other side of the ball and brought it all the way across the table. Into
diagonally,
or diagonally.
Down the rail. Oh wow!
No, diagonally. I managed to. So my 8-ball is wedged into one corner. I want to be in the absolute opposite corner,
Wow.
And I managed to get my eight ball kicked all the way around and nestled in the opposite corner. It didn't sink, but nestled in the opposite corner. And that guy then, what happened? I can't even remember if I won that game or not.
That's not the important part.
But the crowd went absolutely batshit about that shot.
Anytime people are spectating you doing something amazing or terrible is good, right?
Yeah.
We'll be back next week with more Still Untitled. Adam, you're on tour.
I am on tour. I'm looking for pool halls. I'm looking for taxidermy. I am looking for good food. That's what I'm doing on tour.
People can find you at behindthemythstour.com.
Mythbusterstour.com. We are out on the road till December 19th when we finish for the last time in San Francisco. Jamie won't be touring anymore. I will be touring some more, and you'll find out about that next year. But yeah, this is your last chance to see the two of us together on stage. So come on out.
Norm and I will be there.
Norm and you will be there. Yes. It's going to be great. I think we're going to have an after party. It'll be a cathartic time. Cool.
See you guys next time.
Thanks, guys.